The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
It's V Week on ESPN as we continue Jim Valvano's fight against cancer.
Good morning. It is time to get up with Wednesday afternoon football. Big Ben is in. Lamar is out. Will the game even be played? We've got all the answers right off the top. Then, what the actual heck are they doing in Philadelphia? We've got the only answer that explains the way the Eagles are using their quarterbacks. Don't miss it. And one member of our crew has made me think it's possible I've had it all wrong on Tampa Tom. You'll hear that and more as we get up with you, starting right now on a jam-packed Wednesday. And we have got the squad ready to go. Our regular Wednesday crew is here and fired up. Ryan Clark is ready. Dominique Foxworth. Desmond is here. Dan Graziano. We also have Mel and Todd coming up. Heather and Paul, we are busy. And it starts with Wednesday afternoon football. The Ravens have arrived in Pittsburgh. As of now, today's game is on. Even though Baltimore had two more positive COVID tests before departing yesterday. The results, according to Shefty, are, quote, not unexpected and not a concern for the game. The source told that to our Adam Schefter. Here's a look at the Ravens players on the reserve COVID list. Multiple starters on both sides of the ball with 16 players on the list entering the day. I should point out, the running backs Mark Ingram and J.K. Dobbins are eligible to return as soon as today. So they should be able to play. But it is not yet a total certainty that the game will be played. Dan Graziano, explain the latest.
Yeah, total certainty is a pretty elusive concept in 2020. So we are still waiting to make sure. Look, at the beginning of the year, the NFL was not testing people on game days because they couldn't get the results back in time. But they've changed that policy over the last couple of months, and they now administer point-of-care rapid result tests on game days. So Pittsburgh will have them. The Ravens will have them before they leave their team hotel. And if there are a bunch of positives that come back off of that, it is still possible that they move this game back to another week or cancel it. I mean, there's a lot of different things that could still happen. So the hope, obviously, is that all those tests come back clean, that there's no reason for concern that the outbreak that the Ravens have been dealing with for the past week and a half continues to spread, and they are able to kick off this game in just under, at this point, what, about 8 hours. So that's the hope. But yes, there is another round of testing that has to take place before this game can start today.
All right, so stay close by, Dan. I want to bring the rest of the crew in here, and let's talk about this a little bit because, look, we get a Wednesday afternoon NFL game. So if we're fans, that's obviously in some ways an exciting opportunity. I'll be home with nothing better to do than watch this, that's for sure. So, Ryan Clark, let me start with you. What is this game today for the Steelers? You're getting a Baltimore team. You've waited a week and a half to play it. You're getting a Ravens team without Lamar Jackson. You're a former Steeler. You're going on the field today. What are you thinking going in?
I mean, when you go on this field, you think it put your foot on the Baltimore Ravens' necks. Listen, these ain't our homeboys. These aren't our friends. The one thing you do, you hope that they get through the COVID concerns. And after that, that's where your concern stops for this team. Listen, if Michael Jackson went to that parking lot on I'm Bad to dance and there was no Michael Jackson, would you still have the dance off? Hell yeah, you would have the dance off and you would flat out kill him. And that's what the Pittsburgh Steelers are thinking right now. When they get on the field, they need to make sure that they know early and often that this is a game of physicality and you don't have the horses to play. You're in the turf war and you don't have your big hitters. And that's what Mike Tomlin's going to focus on. He's not going to focus on the postponements. He's not going to focus on the fact that it's Wednesday at 3:40. He's going to focus on the fact that he's leading a group of sharks and there is blood in the water. And that's the way they're going to look at it. It helps that it's the Baltimore Ravens. It helps that you don't like them already. It helps that somehow you can find a way to blame them for the reason you're playing on Wednesday at 3:40. So you have a reason to be pissed off and you have somebody to take it out on. And that's what the Pittsburgh Steelers have to do from the very first whistle, because Baltimore already has a little doubt. Let's take every bit of doubt away by the way we hit them in the mouth on play one. And that's going to be the Pittsburgh Steelers' mission.
That's an excellent point. And it's also worth pointing out, we just talked about it on SportsCenter, this is a very important game for both teams. The Steelers are only one game clear of Kansas City for the one seed. The Ravens right now are on the outside of the playoff picture looking in. So my former Raven is Dominique Foxworth. Neek, playing without Lamar Jackson, can they win this game?
It's a long shot, but I think that showing up to the dance-off, you forget that Wesley Snipes and Detective Torres was on the other side. It's not like they didn't have no weapons on the other side. The Ravens still got ballers. So I know that their top guy isn't there, but the rest of that team can play. That defense is still loaded. They're still going to come after you, and they still respect you and understand that division. And everyone knows divisional matchups matter. When you're comfortable with a team, when you're familiar with the team, sometimes the talent isn't as important. But I think it'd be nonsense to pretend like the Ravens shouldn't be big underdogs today, because they're not only missing their quarterback, they haven't really had a chance to practice. Their running backs are just getting back. They have injuries. Put aside the COVID concerns, they have a ton of injuries putting them at a disadvantage. And then we saw the list of players that they have out today because of COVID. It's really tough if you don't practice and you don't have your players to show up and win a game against an undefeated Steelers team.
Now, rarely would we say the Ravens beating the Steelers would feel like a monumental upset. Today, it actually might. Desmond Howard, what do you think?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I agree. It would feel like a huge upset if they're able to pull it off. But I agree with RC. I mean, if I'm the Steelers, I'm just going to go out there and try to demolish them. I'm like looking at Roger Goodell like, you're going to give us this layup, huh, Roger? My man, I love you for this. And go out there and just handle your business. You're playing against a team that you already don't like. There's a lot of disrespect. You hate these guys, competitive hate, obviously. But, yeah, you go out there and you handle your business. Now, you can't assume this is, okay, they're B team and, you know, we have to take it light. These are still professional NFL players. I mean, these guys are football players. So you go out there with the same mentality that you would have if Lamar Jackson and these other guys were lining up and they were going up against you, and you go and you handle your business. But it's really – it's just crazy to me that Roger Goodell would hand – the Pittsburgh Steelers, this alley-oop like this. This is crazy.
I guess the question does remain, was there a better option out there? The objective is to get the game played. If it has to be played on a Wednesday and it has to be played at 3:40 in the afternoon because they're lighting the tree on NBC tonight, then so be it. We got Wednesday afternoon football and we'll be ready for it. Meanwhile, let's go around the National Football League a little bit. We'll get to the Eagles. They have used 22 different offensive line combinations so far this year. That is the most in the NFL. That's part of the trouble they've had. They've given up 46 sacks, 8 more than any other team in the league. And under all of that pressure, their quarterback, Carson Wentz, is throwing the ball to receivers who aren't open. According to our next-gen stats, Wentz has tallied 78 tight window throws this year, second most in the league. And so, not surprisingly, all of that doesn't end well. Wentz has thrown 4 more picks than any other quarterback. Here's Coach Doug Peterson on the state of his QB.
The struggles we had last night weren't from the quarterback position. It was a bunch of mistakes from all positions that caused us to not be as successful. But as far as the rotation goes, you'd like to be in a little more of a rhythm. If it were Jalen in there, maybe he goes a couple plays in a row. You know, and obviously if Carson's in there, he takes the bulk of the action. They're both professionals. They understand and expect nothing less.
Okay, so that was a lot of words. Dominique Foxworth, what?
I don't know. It seems like he's gotten worse at doing press conferences. His press conference last week was kind of a shame, and this one makes even less sense. It feels like he's like a lawyer, like a defense attorney for a criminal who we all watch commit the crime, and he's trying to convince us that he didn't. We saw Carson Wentz throw that ball right to the defense. Like, we saw it. We saw him out there doing nonsense, so I agree. He didn't get a ton of help, but we watched him. I mean, the glove fits. We got to be honest with ourselves and say that Carson Wentz is not playing well. And the nonsense about we got to get a guy in a rhythm. You don't get a guy in a rhythm by throwing one player out there for one play. Like, to me, that feels like he doesn't want to play Jalen Hurts. But somebody higher up in the organization, and I'm not reporting this, obviously, it's just my speculation. It feels like someone higher in the organization than him said, play Jalen Hurts. And he was like, all right, I'm going to show them. I'm going to put him out there for one play. See, I played him. Take that. Like, it doesn't seem like it's something that he really believes in and he wants to make happen. And it's just a mess right now.
I'll say this. While that sounds crazy, I can think of no better explanation, Ryan Clark, for throwing Jalen Hurts onto the field, having him play one play, running exactly the same play you might have run with Carson Wentz and running him back off the field. I don't have a better explanation for how they are handling their quarterback situation right this minute.
Listen, Dom seems dead on. He seems to have created a narrative that makes us believe it. He kind of reminds me of the late, great Johnny Cochran and what he's doing right now, because I never even thought of that. I never even thought of, like, you know what? Let me show you, executives. You wanted to get this guy. You think Carson should be out? I'm going to put him on the field. I'm going to do something that we could do with Carson anyway, and then I'm going to say Carson can do it better. But then when you get into the press conference and you start to fumble over your words, you kind of don't have a direction in what you're saying. It lets me know that you weren't prepared for this. There was only one other person in the world who loved Carson Wentz as much as Doug Peterson coming into this season, and that's Dan Orlovsky. And no matter what Carson Wentz has done, we haven't been able to convince Dan that he can't play. No matter what he's done, he hasn't been able to convince Doug Peterson that he can't play. So Doug Peterson is still believing that Carson Wentz is his guy, and I truly think he doesn't think Jalen Hurts is. And so now when you ask him this question, because he can look at the evidence. He's looking at the evidence. He's standing in front of the jury, and he knows my guy is wrong. But he's saying to himself, but they guy ain't right. And so now he's trying to figure out a way to talk around himself, to say that they're both professionals, to say a lot of words that mean nothing. He's doing his best Jerry Jones impression because he has no idea where to go with this, because in a million years, you couldn't have told him that Carson Wentz was this quarterback and he was totally unprepared.
Yeah, I mean, I've got to be honest with you. That makes sense, too. And a lot of us, including me, are surprised by how badly Wentz has played. So, Desmond, let me come to you. Of course, you covered the college game for us primarily, and you saw all of Jalen Hurts at Alabama and at Oklahoma. What is your sense of it? What was your sense of him coming in and what he can do now in whatever role they put him in Philly?
Well, Greeny, it was obvious that Jalen Hurts wasn't drafted to come in there as a starting quarterback, and no one expected him to start this season. You know, you got Carson Wentz at the quarterback position. Now, he's a guy you would assume they were going to have a couple of packages for him. I had made this comment before about Doug Peterson as a really great offensive-minded coach, and he's going to come up with some schemes, packages to get Jalen Hurts on the field, but not the guy who you want to replace Carson Wentz as a starter. So, and I think that you saw him fumble over his words because he doesn't believe what he's saying to you, because he know he's in between a rock and a hard place in Philly right now with his guy who's not performing up to par. And then you got this rookie who people want to see, but you know he's not ready yet. So now you put him out there in front of the press, and he has to do this press conference knowing that, man, well, what can I say? I can't say this about Hurts because he's our high draft pick and they want to play him. But I don't want to kill my guy Carson, even though he's out there killing himself with his performance. So then as a head coach who has empathy for your quarterback, because don't forget, Doug Peterson is a former NFL quarterback, too. Now he's just emotionally strained about how should he answer these questions and have some sort of empathy and sympathy for what's going on with his quarterback without throwing his quarterback under the bus. Like the guy said, hey, the tape don't lie. We see how Carson's playing, man. He's throwing the ball to the other team as if they're on his team. So Doug is just in a tough position right now. And that's why he fumbled over his words the way he did in that post-game press conference.
Neek, quickly, how does this end? You're the one who started it, so you tell me how it ends. We know Wentz is back. The contract says Wentz isn't going anywhere. He's their quarterback next year. So you got Hurts sitting there. You got Peterson coaching him. How does all this end?
Yeah, I don't think it ends any differently than it starts. Like, I don't suspect any major changes. I don't think Hurts is the long-term answer going forward. They're not going to move on from Doug Peterson, who's brought them a Super Bowl after having this one disappointing season. And last year was riddled with injuries just like this season. I think they end up with Wentz and Peterson for one more season. And then if they don't turn around, then they start making some changes. So I suspect that we get a whole bunch more of the same coming up for the Eagles.
All right, much more NFL as we continue with this crew of guys. Stay close by, but we got to get to the college because last night we had the second edition of the college football playoff rankings, and the top seven teams remained unchanged. Alabama, Notre Dame, Clemson, Ohio State continue to be the top four. Bama maintaining its number one spot after a 29-point win in the Iron Bowl Saturday without their coach, Nick Saban, so they couldn't be more impressive. Same top six. As we look here, Texas A&M, Florida being the two first ones out. All six teams take on unranked opponents in their next games. Five of those will be on the road, so we'll see where it goes. It was a busy day yesterday, and there was a lot of things to pay attention to, even if nothing really moved around at the very top. And so to explain it all, Heather and Paul and Des with us as well. Heather, here's quickly, I want to start with this, because I'm sure a lot of fans saw the news that the ACC canceled a bunch of games. They announced a bunch of schedule changes, and people may not understand fully why they did that. Can you explain what it means?
Sure. Everyone's talking about Notre Dame and Clemson, but we have to remember Miami is also in the mix. So the ACC said, look, we're going to evaluate these three teams based on a 9-game schedule. Miami still has one more game to play to reach that mark. And at the end of the day, what it does is it frees up December 12th to make up games from this weekend if Notre Dame, Clemson, Miami are not able to play. That's basically one more Saturday of a cushion for those three teams in contention. But Notre Dame has already locked up a spot in the ACC championship game. Clemson can do the same on Saturday with a win against Virginia Tech.
Paul, what do you think of it?
Very smart. John Swofford, the commissioner of the ACC, showed that you have to be flexible. I'm talking to you, Kevin Warren of the Big Ten. You can't just make the rules and stick with them in 2020. You have to be able to move. And what he's done, Greeny, is very transparent. He has ticketed Notre Dame and Clemson to the ACC championship game, which is a de facto play-in game. If Notre Dame wins, they're in. If Notre Dame loses close, they're also in, as well as Clemson. And he's giving those two the day off on December 12th while everyone else is playing, especially Alabama and Florida. Florida's supposed to play LSU that day. Alabama's supposed to play Arkansas. The games don't mean anything in terms of the conference play, the college football playoff. So the ACC is being very wise, very judicious, and saying to everyone else, we're taking the day off getting ready for the playoffs.
Okay, so I'm sure a lot of people saw that news yesterday. That's a great explanation. Now, Desmond, let me come to you on this. The big story will be Ohio State going forward. Ohio State's sitting at number 4 still only having played 4 games, and their game this weekend remains sort of in the balance. What is your sense of what should happen with the Buckeyes as this thing goes forward?
If they're able to play 6 games, then I think it's a no-brainer. Now, they're going to play Michigan State. It seems like they're going to play Michigan State this Saturday. I really don't know how that's going to happen, but it just seems that everything is trending in that direction. So that'll be game number 5 for them. And then even if they don't play Michigan, let's say they don't play Michigan, there's still the Wisconsin game that people are pointing at that they can play, I guess, when they're playing, when the Big Ten championship game is going on. That will give them 6 games. So if I had to judge Ohio State right now, though, Greeny, with their 4 games that they've won, they've only played against one team with a competitive pulse, and that was Indiana. And that game was in Columbus, and Indiana gave them all they could handle. And Ohio State didn't look that good. As a matter of fact, it was the worst we've seen Justin Fields look as a quarterback at Ohio State. So when you judge their strength of schedule too, Greeny, their strength of schedule is the worst of any of the top 10 teams right now. The worst. They're 77. But Gary Barter, the spokesman for the College Football Playoff Selection Committee, continuously tells Reese Davis and that crew on Tuesday nights that BYU, that they're so low because of their strength of schedule. So there's some inconsistency there as far as the College Football Playoff Selection Committee is concerned when you're looking at Ohio State over here, but then you're looking at BYU over there, and you're talking about strength of schedule. So I would say right now, just by the eye test, Greeny, they're not one of the top 4 teams in the country. I think that Texas A&M is playing very well right now, but the Florida Gators, their offense is extremely hot, a lot of weapons, and their quarterback is probably the front runner, or he's in the hunt right now to be the front runner for the Heisman Trophy. So that's how I would look at Ohio State today, Greeny.
Heather, let's compare Ohio State for a moment to Texas A&M, because Desmond is running through it here. Texas A&M right now, yes, they have the one loss, but their strength of schedule is 8 in the country, and their strength of record is number 3 in the country. How close are Texas A&M and Ohio State at 4 or 5?
They were very close. Selection Committee Chair Gary Barta said yesterday that they considered moving the Aggies up into that number four spot this week. So that just shows you how precarious Ohio State's position is right now. Now, what he also said was that they like Texas A&M's defense. They're keeping an eye on the Aggies' offense, though. If you look at that game against LSU, it wasn't exactly offensive fireworks. So right now, what's keeping Ohio State ahead of Texas A&M, in spite of that strength of schedule, is how much they like Justin Fields, those offensive playmakers, and that win against Indiana, as Desmond pointed out.
All right, I'd love to do more on this. We will come back a little later in the program with more, because there's a lot more to get to coming out of last night. Guys, stay close if you would. But let me get up and go through some of the other notes of the day. And the first is from college football. Sarah Fuller is expected to continue as Vanderbilt's place kicker on Saturday against Georgia. Last weekend, she became the first woman to play in a Power 5 football game when she delivered the second half kickoff against Missouri. NBA, the Clippers are waiving two-time All-Star center Joakim Noah, signaling a likely end to his 13-year career. In his prime in Chicago, Noah was one of the league's best defenders and ferocious competitors and an All-Star. It looks like it is over for Joakim Noah. And Iowa senior center Luka Garza highlights the list of 50 preseason candidates for the Wooden Award that was announced yesterday. He was one of five finalists for the award last year. Iowa currently ranked number three in the country. Coming up, the 49ers seem to regain their form this weekend, beating the Rams. How will their new living situation impact the rest of their season? That's a big question. We've got the answer. And then Tampa Tom, supposed to bring experience and maturity. But this exchange had RC talking about dad and grandma. He'll explain his tweets. Coming up, it's Get Up on ESPN. Back on Get Up, Dominique Foxworth, the Miami Heat unveiled some new uniforms. They call them Vice Versa. It's the Miami Vice Unis. What do you think?
I mean, I'll take it. I think I'm too old to pull that off. It's leaving for the young, cool guys. I like it. Everything looks good when you're playing well. So as long as Tyler Hero and Dragic and all those guys are balling, those jerseys will be hot. If not, they will not.
See if they can ride that all the way back to another trip to the NBA Finals. We've got much more to do as we continue Get Up this morning. Tough weekend for the Broncos, who struggled without their quarterback options, but Jerry Jones doesn't want to hear it. Wait till you hear what he said as we continue next Get Up on ESPN.
Cancer can take away all my physical abilities. It cannot touch my mind, it cannot touch my heart, and it cannot touch my soul. And those three things are going to carry on forever.
Speech. During those challenging times, ESPN and the V Foundation, our fight against cancer has not stopped. It cannot stop. If you are able, please support cancer research by visiting v.org/donate. 100% of your donation will go directly towards fighting cancer. All right, back to the football news of the day here on Get Up. Dan Graziano, let's go run the hurry up here. 49ers leave today for Arizona. What gives?
Santa Clara County has banned contact sports for at least the next 3 weeks. That means the 49ers cannot play or practice at home. They had to find another place. It is Glendale, Arizona, where they will play their next two home games at the Cardinals Stadium. And in the meantime, we'll have to practice and prepare for those games nearby in Glendale, Arizona. 49ers will be on the road for at least the next 3 weeks, possibly longer. In Cleveland, star edge rusher Myles Garrett was activated Tuesday from the COVID-19 reserve list. Garrett had missed the last two games while on that list, so Cleveland, for its stretch run at 8-3, trying to have its first winning season in 13 years, gets its best defensive player back this week in week 13. Obviously, a pretty important addition for the Browns. And speaking of important additions, the Broncos quarterbacks are back in practice today. Drew Lock and Blake Bortles and Brett Rippon, all of whom were ruled ineligible for Sunday's game because they were close contacts of Jeff Driscoll, who had tested positive, are all eligible to return to practice today. They have been testing negative. Their five-day window is up. And ideally, going forward, everyone will remember to wear masks and follow the rules, and the Broncos won't be caught short without a quarterback on game day again.
Yeah, and that was a terrible situation there. We'll talk more about it as we go. Dan Graziano, thank you. But right now, it's everybody's favorite. It's time for the tweets. It's time for Ryan Clark to explain his tweets.
Get in the gym, bro. Well, I just got buffalo chicken dip. Baker.
Bruh. Lord. As everyone laughs at the way I read your tweets. I can't even do it with a straight face. All right, here we go. The squad has told me that they are extremely funny this week. So here we go with Ryan Clark, who is the best follower on Twitter. And let's see if I can make sense of them. Here's the first one. Bruh, Matt Paradise blocked dude under the bench, and it was viscous. The homies couldn't even go jump him like Smokey wanted to do to Debo because Eric Wilson was holding his hands up like a ref signaling touchdowns. I ain't defending your honor if you ain't. RC, explain that tweet.
First off, I was wrong. This was John Miller. I was so excited. I'm going to be honest. I don't really know offensive linemen like that. So I went to our lads at the depth chart, and I got the wrong name. He turned from a big, mean black dude to a big, mean white dude. But it doesn't matter. Me and my homeboys talk about this all the time. What happened to Eric Wilson, I tell my boys this all the time. If I get in a fight, somebody puts me in a crucifix and hammer fists me to death, leave him alone. Just call the cops. Because obviously he knows something we don't know. And that's what Eric Wilson's homeboy said. They acted like they wanted a piece of Wilson, but they really didn't. Because Wilson was on the ground with his hands up like this. Fight to me is, y'all don't want none either. Leave that bad man alone.
Okay, that's number one. Here comes tweet number two. If Josh Jacobs ran into me like Rocksteady from the Ninja Turtles, it would ruin my game. I'd hunt him down. I'd hunt him all game. Pass play, where is Josh? Run play to Booker, where is Josh? I would search for him like Liam Neeson with my skills that I acquired over a very long career. RC, explain that tweet.
I'm gonna tell you what, I had a uniquely acquired skill set like Liam Neeson did in Taken. And so that's what I will be hunting Josh Jacobs with. Y'all remember Bebop and Rocksteady? Bebop and Rocksteady used to get on our nerves, right? They was chasing the Ninja Turtles everywhere. He had his little horn and stuff. That's the way Josh ran over that boy. When you ever see those movies when the people's soul leave them, but their body is still going, Darquez Dennard watched that from the stands. That wasn't him flying through the air, that was his soul. He had got his soul taken away. So it would have messed up my whole day. They would hand the ball off to somebody else. I would run and hit Josh on the sideline. They throw the ball down the field. Instead of me being in the middle of the field, I'd be blitzing trying to hit Josh Jacobs. You cannot do that to me in front of my mama, in front of my wife, in front of my kids, in front of nobody who loved me. And if you love me, you better come out the stands too, because that is uncalled for. And if I get a penalty, I'm still going to be mad and I'm still going to chase him.
It is like that in Ghost when they get hit and the soul flies out of the body. Okay, one more. Number three, Mike Evans wouldn't even look Tom in the eye. Tom got on that soccer dad hat and the grandma hand on his hip. I know a good old chastising when I see it. RC, explain that tweet.
Greeny, you know a chastising when you see it. You know when they stand over you because you've been in the back of the church talking too much. Tom Brady walked over to Mike Evans like Martin Lawrence from Big Mama House or Tyler Perry from Madea. And he had that hand on that hip, and that hip was cocked, and he had that soccer dad hat on, and Mike Evans refused to look up. He was like, nope, I ain't know it was a hot route. Nope, I ain't make you throw it into that tackle head. Nope, I ain't the reason Tyron Matthew intercepted that ball. But this is how I learned that Tom was wrong. Tom set this up because Tom knew if we watched that video on the sideline that Tony Romo and every other person that ever played quarterback was going to make excuses for him because clearly quarterbacks never mess up. But what did Tom do that showed me that it was his fault? He threw the rest of the balls, the rest of the game, to Mike Evans. That's why Mike Evans got 2 touchdowns, because Tom knew that he staged that chastising. And you know what he was telling them? Listen, it's my fault. It's not your fault. But you're going to let people watch this and think that it's your fault because I'm Tom Brady and I'm the GOAT and I'm just going to throw you the ball the rest of the game. Because that's all it was. Because Tom was wrong. Tom just gave us the posture. Tom just gave us the black grandmother stance. But we all know when you really mean it, you make him go get a switch. And he wasn't getting no switch. And if Mike Evans ain't look up, you got to change that with the backhand. So I knew that was Tom's fault.
That was Ryan Clark explaining his tweets. You had me at dad hat. I really like soccer dad hat. Okay, outstanding. Let's run the floor through some of the college basketball action if we can. Let's see. Oh, Michigan State and Duke. Rocket Watts scored 20 points to help number 8 Michigan State beat number 6 Duke by 6 Tuesday night in the Champions Classic. It was Tom Izzo and the Spartans' first win at Duke. I put a little bit of an asterisk next to it because there were no fans at Cameron Indoor, of course, because of the pandemic. Elsewhere, Jalen Wilson scored 21 of his career-high 23 in the second half, posting his first double-double, helping number 7 Kansas get past number 20 Kentucky in a close game Tuesday night in the Champions Classic. 65-62 was the final. And then, despite 24 combined turnovers, number 14 Carolina held off Stanford to win 67-63 in the Maui semifinals. Leaky Black had a big driving basket at the 102 mark, followed by a clinching free throw with 5 seconds left to seal the win. Freshman Caleb Love led the Tar Heels with 16 points. And we've got college hoops tonight on ESPN and on the app. The 26th annual Jimmy V Classic, highlighted by 4 top 15 teams. Number 1 Gonzaga scoring off against West Virginia. Number 5 Illinois taking on number 2 Baylor. Great night of college hoops tonight on ESPN. Coming up, the Bucks offense can't seem to find its rhythm. Who needs to change their ways? The GOAT or the capped coach? We'll get into it next. Get up on ESPN.
Delicious, meat nutritious, and the snack that packs a real protein punch. Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you're on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein, providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snacking game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
NBA fans, listen up. You've got to try Pick 6, the newest fantasy app from DraftKings, an official partner of the NBA. Getting started is simple. Select if a player will have more or less of a stat. For example, will a player have more than 1 rebound, or will a player have less than 3.5 assists? Pick your favorite players and compete for huge cash prizes. Download the new DraftKings Pick 6 app now using code Parlay and take on the competition with your best NBA player picks. Only on DraftKings Pick 6 with code Parlay. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 18 plus in most eligible states. Age varies by jurisdiction. Eligibility restrictions apply. Pick 6 not available in all states, including but not limited to Connecticut and New York. For up-to-date lists of states, visit dkng.co/pick6states. Void where prohibited. See terms at pick6.draftkings.com/promos.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use the code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only, not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use the code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Question you're trying to ask.
Be better tomorrow.
I'm not answering that. That's a clown question, bro.
Next.
Mike, why are you in such a bad mood?
What do you care?
What else do you want to know?
Next question.
I'm not going to answer any questions for you.
Answer my question! The question, jerk!
All right, the fun continues as I will now ask Dominique Foxworth a series of hard-hitting football questions, and he will be forced to answer them whether he wants to or not. Here we go. First question. Dominique, on a scale of 1 to 10, how concerned should the Dolphins be that Tua has already gotten hurt?
8. I think they should be very concerned, and more than the Dolphins should be concerned, I think maybe Tua should be concerned, because we know that the Dolphins have 4 first-round picks in the next 2 seasons. There's nothing stopping them from packaging those picks to move up or using one of those picks to move up and get another quarterback. I know it might be a little premature, but the major concern about Tua was not his ability to play on the field, but his ability to stay on the field. And already, early in his career, he's already had an injury that sidelined him for at least 1 game. I think that concern should be real down in Miami.
Okay, I like it. Next question. After the Las Vegas Raiders got absolutely flattened by Atlanta this past weekend, it is simply this. The Raiders, pretenders or contenders?
They're pretenders. That offense is impressive, but the defense is so, so bad. They're giving up points on half of their drives, which means they turn opposing offenses to the best offense in the league. That is unacceptable. That's pretty, pretty bad. I know we've talked about how bad defenses have been around the league throughout the entire league, but the Raiders, they seem to be kind of rounding into the worst possible example of that. And they can score a lot of points with Henry Ruggs, and Carr is kind of inconsistent, but when he's on, they're good. Josh Jacobs is a great running back. It seems like they've made all the right moves on one side of the ball and all the wrong moves on the other side of the ball. So you can't be a contender if you can't stop anybody 50% of the time.
Yeah, that's a great note that you saw from Hembo there. That is actually the worst percentage in recorded history. All right, last one, Dominique. I'm telling you right now, either Seattle or Green Bay is making the Super Bowl out of the NFC. Which one are you telling me it is?
It's a tough choice. The NFC is up in the air right now. I think I'm going to go with Seattle, though. I think that their defense is, again, it comes down to defenses, and these are two teams who are not playing as well on defense as you would like. But Seattle seemed to show up last weekend. They got Griffin back. They should be getting Dunbar back, the other corner. Dunlap has been able to improve their pass rushing ability, so I think that their defense is getting better. There's no problems on the offensive side of the ball for either of these teams. They're going to be able to score points. The question is, who do you trust to be able to get a stop when they need it? And it's hard to trust either team, honestly, but I like the Seahawks a little bit more. And I think the Packers' inability to stop the run is going to be incredibly concerning in the playoffs.
Obviously, two teams where legendary quarterbacks are trying to overcome what have been less than below average defenses. Speaking of legendary quarterbacks, let's move it on to Tampa Bay and Tampa Tom. Tom Brady has thrown 11 picks this season. Only Carson Wentz has thrown more. Brady has 4 games with multiple picks, already tied for the most in any season in his career. And his coach, Bruce Arians, well, he's not exactly known for running the football, and that has certainly been the case this year. Tampa Bay ranks 28th in the league in rushing yards per game. And their running backs aren't helping out at all. The Bucs runners have dropped 13 passes so far this season, nearly twice the total of any other team. So it is a combination of circumstances. And if you watch this show or listen to my radio show, you know that I have been yelling and screaming that this is all Bruce Arians' fault and that they are running the wrong offense. And Dominique, this morning, for the very first time, you convinced me that I might have that wrong. Tell me why.
Yeah, I mean, what about what's happened in Tampa Bay suggests to you that Bruce Arians is making these decisions? Was it when they went and signed Gronkowski, or was it when they went and signed AB? Like, it seems like Tom Brady had a point to prove. He came into this season hearing everyone say that Belichick is the reason why he's been successful, that his arm strength is waning, he's getting old. He wants to throw these deep passes just as much as Bruce Arians. And if Tom Brady wanted to do something different, you know what they would be doing? Something different. Tom Brady is running this offense. It seems like Tom Brady is running this team. So I'm not sure that we can forgive Tom Brady and blame BA for anything more than we already have. The only control that Bruce Arians seems to have is to be able to take shots at Tom Brady in the media. And he is definitely wielding that power quite willy-nilly. And he's enjoying that because that's the only thing he can do. All he can do is say, Tom Brady messed up that read. Check it out. Watch him miss his pass. That's on Tom. That just further lets me know that he's annoyed with Tom Brady making all the decisions.
It's actually a very good point, RC. It is the first thing that has really given me pause. Everything else suggests Tom Brady is making a lot of decisions in Tampa. So why wouldn't he be involved in these decisions? What do you think, Ryan Clark?
He's absolutely involved. And anytime you see a great quarterback and a great quarterback coach relation, the quarterback has something to do with that. You see the offensive coordinator go to the quarterback. Do you like this play? How do you feel about this? And as they practice it during the week, someone will take it out or they'll put something else in. But when you watch Tom Brady, being able to run the offense and make the throws isn't the problem. His problem is making the throws under pressure. Himbo shot me a stat. He's thrown from a clean pocket more than anyone in the league 27 times, and he's been dang good while doing that. But the 20 pressures he has no touchdowns, 5 interceptions. If he threw the ball away every single play, his rating would be 40, and it's 20. And so when you look at what Tom Brady is doing, he just doesn't want to take the hits anymore. I remember playing this game, and when I played this game, I said, every play, I'm coming out, and I'm trying to split somebody. I'm trying to smash somebody. And now when I watch football, I flinch. When I watch football, I'm like, ooh, I can't believe I did that. Well, Tom Brady's 2 years older than me. And if you look at Tom Brady when he's pressured by Tyrann Mathieu, and he's not even close to him, and Tyrann Mathieu is smaller than Greeny, he's throwing the ball and turning away. Interception to Breland. When he throws the ball into the helmet before he goes over to chastise Michael Evans, you know what's happening? Nothing. Nobody's around Tom Brady. They just whisper, say, bruh, we going pressure. And you know who he turned into? Sam Darnold's uncle. He saw ghosts too, but they're older ghosts. And you know that older ghosts are even meaner because they're mad that they're still in the spirit realm and they haven't ascended. And so they make you turn away and throw the ball into people's helmet, and then you have people who decide they're going to defend you when you do that. No, when dude is getting pressured, he don't want that smoke, and that's okay. We all get old. We all get tired of getting hit. He feels like Mike Tyson. He's like, you're talking about Bruce Arians. You're talking about the interceptions, but what about my tail? Why is nobody worried about me? And Tom Brady's trying to save himself.
That's fair. Again, he's 43 years old, but he is so much in control of the fact that he's still out there playing. He obviously wants to play for a reason. Desmond, you watch this. What do you see in that Tampa offense, and can they get it fixed?
Well, you know, I'm glad you asked the question, Greeny, because, I mean, RC was going so long, I thought he was going to try to take us into the break. I mean, I was like, am I going to get a chance? Man.
My bad, Dez, dog.
Wow. Okay, so listen.
I see. He did get four analogies.
I don't
four
know if there's any more meat on the bone after that. You know what I mean, Greeny? You know, RC hit on a very interesting stat. Talking about when he's pressured, when Tom Brady's pressured, and how he's throwing the interceptions. And that's what I see. Like, when he's pressured, he's not on the same page as his outlet valves. This guy's his safety nets. These guys like Mike Evans. We saw when he played Sunday night against Kansas City, when he pressured, looked for Mike Evans. Mike wasn't ready. When Tom was ready, Tom threw the ball, hit off somebody's helmet. Deflection, interception. We've seen that consistently throughout the season. When he was in New England, everyone was on the same page when he got pressured, when he got blitzed. You have one of those little crafty receivers in the slot. They'll turn around immediately, get the ball, and keep the chains moving. He doesn't have that he doesn't have that right now, and that's what's really hurting Tom Brady. So until he can get on the same page with receivers down in Tampa, especially when he's pressured, especially when he's blitzed, they're going to have big problems. There's no doubt in my mind that he's a part of the game plan. But that's all out the window when you have to go out there and the bullets are live, when they're coming from left and right, yeah. And your receiver has
come
to see
Dez.
It, and he has to turn around immediately. He's part of the game plan, but the blitzing, they got to get that down, and he has to get on the same page with his receivers, his hot receivers.
Okay. All right, everybody on the clock. At the end of the day, maybe what we figured out here is they need this bye week, which they have right now, and maybe they figure a few things out. Man. Meanwhile, speaking of troubles at quarterback, this was an entirely different level, obviously, in Denver, where the Broncos played with Kendall Hinton, a wide receiver from the practice squad, at quarterback this past week in a 31-3 loss to the Saints. He finished 1 of 9, throwing for 13 yards and 2 picks. The Broncos had no offense. They had no chance. You know what happened. All their quarterbacks couldn't play because of COVID protocols. So when we take a look at the numbers they put up there, it was historically bad, basically as bad as any team in history. But listen to how Jerry Jones, in his regular weekly radio interview, viewed that relative to his team's quarterback struggles. Listen.
You take risks when you put all the quarterbacks in the same room. If you were worried about those things, you can spread them out a little bit. You can save one. I don't know that that Denver had any more of a challenge than we've had with DiNucci.
I'm going to have to say, I'm sorry, what? Ben DiNucci was a quarterback that Jerry Jones drafted. So what he's saying, Ryan Clark, is we were in as bad a shape as this team that found out the day before their game that they had to play a practice squad wide receiver at quarterback when we had a week to get ready with a quarterback that I drafted in the seventh round. Ryan Clark, what?
Jerry Jones wants to be oppressed so badly. And you're not, Jerry. Jerry, you're just making bad decisions. You made bad decisions on people you drafted. You made bad decisions on people that you brought over as free agents. You put together a roster that just doesn't work. And for him to compare himself or their team to the Denver Broncos is absolutely delusional. If there ever was a time where they wanted to say, you know what, he may not have the capacity to run this team, this is your chance, Stephen Jones. Take it to the court.
Graziano, 15 seconds. Your thoughts?
I just pictured poor Ben DiNucci in his car running errands, listening to the radio, and gets blindsided by this. Like, I got drafted by the Cowboys. I feel good about that. Now it turns out I'm no better than a practice squad wide receiver. Just felt bad for Ben. That's
I don't go I, back into work. I'm Ben. I'm done. I pack my stuff up and leave right there. I'm
that's
done.
That's pretty much how it went. All right, we will take a break up against the end of the hour, but a huge hour coming your way on this Wednesday. Still to come, the Steelers remain undefeated. Will they have a chance to get to 11-0 this afternoon? We're going live to Pittsburgh to find out if this game will even be played. Don't miss it.